Hello, everyone. Welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It's October 26, 2016, which means that we're almost a full week before Halloween, but we're not going to get another chance at it, so it's the Halloween episode of Weekly Manga Recap, everyone. Prepare to be scared and... Chris, where are you?
And terrified.
Ah!
Oh!
No! Flashlight!
Whoa! I think you had that wrong, Nick. I think you mean that it's Trick Oles Freeman, a.k.a. Why Ghoul of Time. And I'm, of course, Witch to Valerios, a.k.a. known as Horror Luti.
Here's really funny. God, yours for me were, ugh.
What?
You wounded.
Why? Yours were great.
No, they were terrible. Yours were at least so bad they were amazing.
A sec here. All right.
Oh my God.
There you go.
We do love Halloween month here in Weekly Manga Recap.
That's it.
It lets us change things up a little bit. We get to talk about series that we normally wouldn't. We get to make stupid fucking Halloween puns. And we get to be general goofballs. Okay, at least that one. That one's, like, always applies, I know, but we get to do it with orange and black coloring.
Exactly.
This time of year instead.
I get
instead
to
of the normal.
I get to sit in the dark and I'm not weird for it. Like, this is acceptable today. But it's okay. Captain America's right behind me in the corner. He's protecting me, just in case.
The power of darkness can stand up to the great and mighty beacon of light that is America.
Captain America doesn't get scared, except for intolerance. I'm sorry, Nick. I didn't even think,
like, this is, like, one of the times I'm not wearing one of my dozen t-shirts with skulls on them.
I tried to go with it, but the only one I have is a Guns N' Roses shirt, but it still has a skull on it, so I call that a win.
I should go change the t-shirt.
Just start stripping on camera, like, By the way, I'm super excited for this episode, Nick, because...
Why is that?
I think we're taking... What may be my favorite recommendation of all time. I was really excited for this one. I got into this. This had so much to it. It was fascinating from beginning to end. I couldn't put it down. And I can't wait to talk about it. So if you're ready, I just want to kind of begin. So, guys, our Halloween final recommendation is, of course, Not Dead Yet, the Phil Collins memoir, which covers everything in Phil Collins' life, his autobiography. It has, of course, a very handsome photo of him on the front. It talks about his marriages. It goes into talking about his illnesses and the recent health issues he's come into, his back surgery. It's even got a witty joke on the back where it's like, I'm Phil Collins, and as you can see from the front cover, I'm not dead yet. a funnier line beyond that, too. But, I'll save that. You need to pick up the book to find out. Of course, we're going to be talking about it, though, because that's what I've been reading the past week, right? This was the recommendation, wasn't it? I'm hoping yes, because otherwise, who knows what we're going to do this week?
I don't even know how to respond to all of that. It's been years since you pulled out your Phil Collins obsession on me.
Well, here, how about this? How about the rest of the podcast, you just talk to Phil Collins? Like, he'll just be like, good joke there, Nick. Studio. It's my Phil Collins impersonation, so why not? Studio. I'm dancing with you, Nick.
When it comes to obsessions with Phil Collins, we come from two different worlds, although we are one family.
Oh. But you know, Nick, I can't dance. It's another Phil Collins song. I thought we could do this, Nick, but apparently I busted into the not top tracks of Phil Collins and lost you already.
No, not all there. I don't know. I'm not sure what we're going to do tonight. I've got a few I can do.
Well, Nick, just accept it. It's going to be another day in paradise.
Oh, good. And it was so much more elegant, too. You can tell which of us actually listens to the comments. Oh, man. I'm trying. Oh, God. I just need a little bit more time to think about what I'm going to do next. That's all.
Was that the one you went with?
Gotta think about it.
Nick, I'm glad I'm not your father, because you're no son of mine. I got that in there. Boom.
As terrifying as it would be to have an entire half-hour-long conversation about the life of Phil Collins, considering I have no idea what to say about him. No, that's not the recommendation that we did for this week. It's something that would probably be a little bit better known to manga-specific audiences. Especially when you consider the guy who did this series is, like, the father of, like, an entire genre of manga. Not superhero manga, or, like, devil occult theme stuff, but he basically invented piloted robot series. Like, really? That's crazy to me.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is a series by Go Nagai that was from the early 70s. We've kind of got some up and down luck when it comes to really old series like this. And the last time that we covered a dark superhero story from the 70s, Nick got mad. Nick got really mad.
I know. What was Cross Game?
No, Spider-Man.
Oh, well, Spider-Man, true. But did you also get really angry at Cross Game?
Cross Game, I got a little bit angry, but that's from the 2000s. That guy's just been doing manga since the 70s. Okay. No, I just got mad at that because, like, well, it's another Mitsuru Adachi series, and it's just like all the ones that he's been doing for the last 40 years. this is a series called Devilman. And when you've got a title like Devilman, you sound like, what? Is it a superhero with the powers of a devil? Yes, pretty much exactly that. that's the premise, basically.
Simple days of superheroes. You didn't have to have, like, elaborate names. You were just noun man or noun girl, because woman just, I guess, sounded too clunky.
Sometimes adjective man, or maybe even verb man to describe what they do.
Yes.
Like One Punch Man is like that. He beats his opponents in one punch. That's not your superhero name, Nick. Shut up! It's the name of the series. God, it's actually a really basic story in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Because it's about this kid who discovers that there are demons that are going to start invading the world, and in order to fight them, he bonds with one in order to gain its power so that he can fight against them. And so he becomes Devilman. This is a popular series that, was turned into an anime, and I believe is very influential, just because, you know, it was a really popular series in the 70s. Look at, anything that's an overt superhero story since then, it's going to have a little bit of Devilman in it. Mm-hmm. It's always a little bit weird when we talk about that kind of thing because, you know, if you look at a story that's that old, if it happens to contain any cliches in it, well, it very well could have been written when it wasn't a cliche.
Yeah.
So you have to be a little, think of it a little bit differently.
Or even when you look at something, you're like, that's kind of a simplification of things. And you're like, oh, right, I guess this was the series other series worked off of and added onto. So that's why they seem more intricate, is simply because they were trying to be something more than this.
But I think that there's honestly something kind of almost elegant about the simplicity of this story. We've got this guy, Akira Fudo, and a lot of the story is about how he bonds with this demon named Amon, and he fights other demons and he's trying to defend the world while also trying to hold on to his humanity because he's bonded with the devil. and his personality is starting to get a little bit more violent and aggressive, and he's trying to hold on to himself. And despite the fact that it's like, okay, that's really basic, and, you know, you can look at a lot of different stories, like, oh, you know, being corrupted by the devil inside me, that's something that's just, like, standard to a shonen series now. It's a little checkbox that you have to, you know, decide whether or not you're going to fill in whenever you're making your shonen action protagonist. Do they have a devil spirit inside of them? Yes or no?
I mean, let's just even look at the series we currently talk about on Jump. Or in Asta,
Amalgam of Distortion.
Boruto in a vague way. Fairy Tail. We haven't seen My Hero
Multiple
yet.
Characters in Fairy Tail. Well, no, but we do have Tokoyami, who's got Dark Shadow.
Yeah.
So it's something that's got...
Toriko.
Toriko's got three demons inside of him. So, I mean, it seems to be something that happens more often than not, honestly. And in this one, it's not, oh, what is the character of the devil? It's, well, it's a devil. It's a powerful demon. That's really it. The series takes some really surprisingly dark turns at the end. But other than that, I mean, there's not a whole lot of surprises to be found in it. There's, he's got his love interest, Miki, who is kind of, she's a weird one, but she's somewhat attracted to his aggressive side, but he's also trying to hold on to it so he doesn't hurt her. And trying to keep the secret from her. You've got his non-powered friend who just tries to help fight devils because he's just got a gun.
Yeah.
And
the dude who, like, shows up in, like, the start and is like, stop bullying that guy or I'll kill you.
But other than that, I mean, there is... It's a weird series, honestly, because it kind of comes from a time when you could get away with more, it seems like. And I don't mean that in terms of the graphicness of the violence, and it is quite graphic at times. But I mean more in terms of it doesn't seem like it needs to hold itself to the genre and the tone that you would associate with it. Of a dark, devil-possessed hero. He must be brooding and, 100% of the time. He does do a lot of angsting in the story. But he also gets goofy a lot.
Yeah.
There's some really weird, goofy moments in the story, too.
Yeah, it's not what we have kind of become to assume the standards for this sort of genre or this sort of tone would be at this point, you know? If you look at something Amalgam of Distortion... That falls into what we consider modern day of, like, the person who's possessed with an evil spirit sort of thing. You know, they have to be like, I want to fight against this thing within me. But this doesn't have that same kind of attitude to it. And it's just it's kind of refreshing in a way, which is odd since this is much, much older. But it's just kind of nice to see essentially what's now no longer the standard, but what was the inspiration for it and seeing how things have changed since then.
There are moments in it where it almost seems like there's an inappropriate insertion of humor in it. I say almost inappropriate because I think it's effective humor anyway. I'll give you an example. Akira is told by his friend Ryo that these devils are coming. Ryo has discovered this research that his father did and that his father uncovered the secret of the demons, these creatures that have actually been around since ancient times, but the Ice Age has actually caused them all to go dormant, and they're just about to start waking up en masse and start invading humanity. And so they go into this bunker as his father's mansion is being attacked by these demons. They go down this tunnel, and Ryo says, look, there's only one way we can fight these, and that is if we assume the ability of a demon. Beyond this door lurks a world of nightmares. If you want to help me fight the demons, then you can never go back. Once you go beyond this door, you will be giving up your humanity. And so Akira's like, I'm scared, but, you know, I want to do this. You know, I'd rather do this than just submit to death. So let's do this. And so they go through the door and they go into a go-go club. And Akira's just like, what the fuck? Is this some sort of goddamn joke? What the fuck is wrong with you? Why are we in a go-go club? I thought this was our plan. Just goes on. Like, what the fuck, man? You got me all built up for fun. What is this bullshit? And Ryo is kind of like fucking with him for a little bit. He's like, come on, man, get drunk, dance with this girl, try to get her to take her top off, make out with that bitch. And eventually, he finally settles down and explains, like, no, see, in order to bond with a demon, you have to actually, this is like a Sabbath. We've got to lose our humanity and logic and give into our passions in order to bond with the demons. But before that, he's just like, yeah, let's party, bitch!
Let's do it! It just starts playing, like
what
party.
What the fuck?
Just Andrew WK playing over and over again in the background.
It's basically what happens until they start dying. It's like they just want... It is kind of just a scene out of Aqua Teen Hunger Force where Andrew WK shows up until people start dying.
Oh. I enjoyed this series. I apologize, I don't have a whole lot to say on this one.
But it's a quick read. It's five volumes, but it goes by pretty quickly.
Honestly. It's also, because it's that older style, there isn't as much of a necessity of, like, cramming panels together, or they're laid out in a very straightforward sense, so it's sometimes not a lot of dialogue per page, and a lot of the dialogue's also very simple as well. Like, it's... Mm-hmm. This isn't like Bleach, where they have to explain what Reietsu is and how their flash step managed to get past someone's bankai or anything. It's a lot more simplified. So
it's got the advantage of not every story in manga has been told a million times over by this point.
Yeah.
I mean, the background for the demons is they used to be around a long time ago. They've been asleep for a long time, but some of them have persisted, and that's how you get legends of different monsters, is that there was a demon that bonded with a wolf, and so it became a werewolf. There's a demon that bonded with the vampire bats, so that's why there are vampires. There are just little bits here and there that just build on, you know, stuff that you already know about just from living. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, yeah, all those tales of monsters you've heard of, those are actually demons. So, there you go.
Yeah.
And that's all they've got to explain. There's also a little bit where Ryo and Akira are kind of theorizing stuff back and forth. And Ryo said, and because Akira overheard this conversation at school where the guy was talking about predators and prey. And I was like, well, demons eat humans, so does that mean that, you know, we're just prey to them? And Ryo's like, yeah, I think so, but also there seems to be a lot of deliberate malevolence in it, too. But it's all really simple stuff, as opposed to, you know, 300 years ago, your great-grandfather led a group of 10 men in order to...
Long ago, before Sigourney Weaver.
Okay, that story is simple compared to a lot of manga that I've read.
Yeah.
If you can get the entire premise out in a 15-second speech,
then you're nailing it. A lot of series would say could do that. But yeah, I mean, I really, I think this is a solid series. I think it's kind of just interesting to read and look back and kind of just see, you see hints of what's become part of that genre, but at the same time, you see something completely different. And as you said, there's an elegance to it in its simplicity, but at the same time, being completely, not completely, but contrary to what we expect from this sort of series, you know, being the fact that it had that freedom and did things that are just different. You know, you have an entertaining cast. It's solid all the way around. I don't know if I really would say it's like very spookifying, but it fits the monster theme of Halloween. Definitely. Very well.
And also a lot of bloodshed.
Yes. And boobs. In fact, if you like boobs, you get
quite
a lot of those.
A few boobs.
They don't hide around with that stuff.
No, nipples. Underage nipples, I think. I'm pretty sure Miki's not 18. But a lot of the story is just Devilman fighting against other demons. And the artwork, it's got that older style to it where, you know, there's a lot more rounder designs to the faces. Things, the faces aren't all very well defined. But at the same time, the action flows really well between the illustrations. You mentioned the style is a lot simpler. There's a, you know, much more freedom and large panels and stuff. And it gives the whole thing a very cinematic style. There's a fight about halfway through it where Akira actually teams up with this group of five Yankees, and they start fighting these possessed students who have these spiders on their heads. They're controlling them. And so he instructs them, you know, we've got to try not to hurt these people, so just aim for the spiders on their heads. And each of them has their own signature weapon that they fight with. And it's just this fairly lengthy fight to them just having this fight with these kids and knocking spiders off their heads that I really got into. And it was something that I wasn't expecting from Devil Superpower series. Just a much more simple fight. Because, to be clear, with his devil powers, Akira does shoot laser beams from his giant eyebrows. I wasn't able to tell, honestly, if that was a joke on purpose or what.
I was like, maybe this is where Dio got his fucking space ripper eyeball beams.
I am 99.9 multiple times repeating sure that Bobo's nose hairs are a reference to Akira's giant eyebrows, which at one point latch onto another villain's eyebrows, which she is using to control her arm that has been ripped off in order to pilot her around like Frieza's destructo disc. And this series is awesome.
Edit.
But honestly, other than that, because there's not a whole lot to talk about, there's not a whole lot of characters to make note of. The only other thing that I've got to talk about is how ridiculously dark and depressing the ending is. That was a little surprising.
Do you want to spoil it, or?
I do, because it's so different from what you would expect from this kind of story for a shonen action story.
All right, well, I'll note that we're doing spoilers then, so.
Yeah.
If you haven't.
And we're not going to.
If you haven't read it, and you want to, if everything we've said to this point makes you excited to read it, then stop here. There'll be an annotated note then to say when we are going to actually start with the recap then. So just go forward and click to that point, and that way you can come back and listen to this afterwards after you finish Devil Man.
Yeah. Stuff like gore and just completely out of nowhere unnecessary nudity. And also older art style and storytelling techniques don't bother you, then I definitely recommend checking this out. There's a lot of stuff that you've probably seen in it before, but it's still, like you said before, surprisingly refreshing considering it's an old series.
Mm-hmm. It's probably the best luck I've had reading an older series, to be honest. Like anything from this period.
So, the spoiler here is, the good guys lose. It turns out that Ryo, Akira's friend, is actually literally Satan in disguise. Now, you hear me say literally Satan, and you may think, oh, so he's a really bad evil dude. No, he's literally Satan. Like, actually Satan. They explain basically that Ryo had essentially hypnotized himself to turn himself into a human and live life as a human for a little while so that he could thus, when he remembered who he actually was and returned to being sane, he would know humanity's weak points so that he could best wage war on humanity while knowing how to defeat them. So he's revealed to be Satan at the end, and also a hermaphrodite.
I think that's commonly...
The devil takes many forms?
Well, I've actually heard the like thing of like the devil being a hermaphrodite before, but I always thought that was like a heavy metal kind of thing. I didn't realize, like, I hadn't thought of that being like a global kind of almost insinuation, because I don't remember it might honestly be in the Bible. I've forgotten at this point. Then, despite the fact he's like essentially our Darth Vader, they didn't teach us a lot about Satan in school, which I feel like it was a missing point. Like, how am I supposed to fight this dude if I don't know what he's all about?
Aren't you supposed to be taught to recognize that so you can fight against it?
No, we're taught to judge other people and be angry at things.
This is...
Hate gay people, all the wrong shit. I'm like, what are Satan's powers? Fire or stuff? Anyway, let me tell you about why the Jews are all wrong. Just like, chapter 8 again.
Oh, we covered chapter 8 last semester, 5 times.
And you're covering it next year too. Now shut up and open the page.
When do we get to chapter 7? You're not supposed to know how the gay people live. In hedonistic lifestyles, that's all you need to know. They're salt now.
She's like, don't worry about it. They don't reproduce, so eventually they'll all kill themselves out. You're like,
is that how that's going to work?
You're like, you know, teacher, that sounds like some pretty sound logic now that you're saying it.
It sounds like sound logic, but they seem to have been around for thousands of years despite that.
Reckoning. I'm like, oh, that right, a reckoning's right around the corner, as you say, every day.
Any millennium now. Oh, boy. Well, there goes our Christian listenership.
Brennan's just like, I'm never listening to you guys again.
Oh, God. Anyway. So, meanwhile, as Rio has discovered who he really is, and has discovered and has realized that he is actually in love with Akira because of the time that they've spent together, and so he wants to somehow save Akira despite the fact that he's waging war against him now. Meanwhile, humanity's going to shit because they have the distinct tactical advantage of fighting against a giant horde of demons that can possess them. So, you know, they're rolling out their armies and stuff, and the demons are just taking them over and turning their tanks against them. So, things aren't going so well. Paranoia is raging everywhere. And when they discover that some humans are turning into devil men, they turn against them pretty quickly, too. And Akira is driven out and is being hunted down. Miki, his love interest's family, cast him out, but they... mostly do it in order to protect him slash themselves, because they'll know where people will know where to find them. The relationship between them still remains friendly. But people find out about Tamiki's family and think that Akira is still hiding out in her home, so they go there and they kill everyone. Not only do they kill everyone, they chop Miki's head off and put it on a stake. Series gets really dark.
It's a little metal at the end.
So,
remember when everyone was like, I hate the shit out of Naruto, and they went to Sakura's house and killed her family and then chopped her head and put on the pike? It's basically like that. You can see where the influences have continued on to Jump as time's going on.
So, Akira, at this point, you know, has lost almost all of his faith in humanity. The people that he swore to protect from the demons, who are gradually becoming more animalistic and ruthless and are turning against him. And so he's just had to kill a bunch of them. And he goes back to Miki's house and he's like, as long as I have Miki, then I won't lose my faith. Sees her head here, her naked torso over there, entrails over there. Kills all of them, cradles her head in his arms. Well, he's like, I will kill you, Satan, even though I have nothing left to live for. We will see who wins at the end. And then he loses. And God sends his army down to defeat the demons. The world is ruined. All of humanity is dead. All the demons are probably going to die, too.
In case there are a couple of those guys you're rooting for.
Jesus Christ.
You know what, though? It's a fucking final ending, if nothing else. It doesn't leave a lot of room for like, well, you know, maybe, you know, I wish they had gone here or felt like kind of a cop-out. They're like, no, I'm ending this shit. This is the final fucking ending. You didn't manage to beat the almighty fucking demon army, so God did it for you. And now humanity's eradicated. The end.
Missy J in the chat is saying we should read Beelzebub next. We already did that. A lot more to say about it because, you know, it was weirder. Yeah, so. God. I don't really know what to say about it. Nobody's happy. They all die. The end.
I like it, though, if only because you don't get that ending a lot. Like,
really don't. It's especially not in shonen series.
Uh-huh. It's usually that's where the optimism comes in, or he'd unlock. Like, again, today, modern day, he'd unlock a new fucking, like, angel devil form, and he'd be stronger and beat Satan and, like, stop God's army right beforehand, then maybe he'd, like, beat God just for shits and giggles. But in this, it's like, no.
There would be some sort of bittersweet or sense of hope.
Yes, there'd be optimism at the end of it.
He'll continue fighting on and striving forward. No, they're all dead.
Yeah, and it's not even like, you could be like, well, you know, the hero losing his love interest. It's like a trope as old as time, and, you know, but it's, he doesn't win. Like,
women
it's
stuffed in their fridge.
Yeah, it's not even that notion of he does it and wins, but it's still bittersweet because God still has to, like, eradicate the army and destroy everything. He still just loses to Satan, and then God has to come down. So it's like, oh, there really isn't, like, a much... Unless you're like, good, I'm glad they killed all those, like, rioters who murdered Miki's family. You don't really get, like, that, yeah, take that, you, moment at the end. But, I kind of dislike it, just because of the fact that, you know, we always have stories that end on a happy note. It's not like there's this... I know there are, like, alternate series, sequel series... Not sequel series, but, like Lady Devilman, and, like, I think there's a comedy version of it. There's a whole bunch of other Devilman series.
The animated version is very different. It's... People... I mean, I've never seen it myself, but people remember it for being goofy. Mm-hmm. And looking... And I'm just going to... Spoilers for the 40-plus-year-old anime series... The 1972 anime television series has no such apocalyptic conclusion, and the ending is happier for Akira and Miki than in the manga. Devilman's identity as a real demon is exposed to Miki in the final episode, but she accepts that she is in love with Devilman, even if he is not human. Also, the whole story with Ryu Asuka slash Satan does not happen in the anime, as Ryu is a manga-only character.
Hold on, I want to note on that first sentence. They have a happier ending than what's in the manga? Why would you even put that? There's no happy ending at all for them in the manga. She's dead. He dies trying to avenge her.
I mean, literally, like, the closing moments of the story are Satan is confiding in Akira why he did everything. That he betrayed God and joined with the demons because he felt that it was unfair the way that they were being treated. And he resented humanity for being preferred by God. Essentially, you know, a Lucifer kind of story. And so, and he says, you know, but I fell in love with you and I wanted you to be able to exist in the world that I would create. And so that was why I actually made you into Devilman, but I wish that we didn't have to fight. Can you forgive me? And it pans back and reveals that Akira is actually dead. He's confining all this in his corpse.
It's like, no, not a moment of giving you, like, a happy ending. Again, it's the sort of thing that if it happened to other, like, if all happened all the time, you'd hate this. And it's so weird, too, because you can see this ending in, like, a television series, but then there's always another season to help, like, go beyond. Because there's, like, even The Wire has seasons, or, like, Boardwalk Empire seasons where you're like, wow, the bad guys really came out ahead in this. But usually another season happens where then you get the comeuppance. But there's not really that for this. It's like God destroys the Earth because all of the heroes were lost and killed. Credits. And it's like, okay. Fucking put the pin in that story.
Yeah.
But hey, if you were interested in everything before and that ending sounds way too morbid for you, maybe you'll be better off skipping the series or just reading part of the way through and then imagining your own conclusion. But I think it's worth just experiencing, if nothing else.
I'd like to stop watching Rent before the last half hour and pretend that they...
Everyone got cured and they got their rent money.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what the movie's about, right? Getting rent money?
And then they sing a happy song at the end.
Yeah. I've got all this money and I paid my rent. What a great day to be me. And I don't have AIDS. Do, do, do.
Wow. Songwriting went off a cliff when, after that editorial mandate.
I knew two things about rent. I think they pay rent in the movie, and a bunch of people have AIDS, I think.
Everybody got AIDS and shit.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. So that's going to do it for Devilman. Hope we didn't see you guys too much. We got other manga to talk about now. Chris has terrible Halloween puns to make. So let's kick off the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap with...
Go ahead, Nick.
No,
go ahead.
Amalgam of Distortion.
But, Nick, don't you mean Amal Coffin of Distortion?
What the fuck?
Amal...
That doesn't fit...
Amal Coffin of Destruction.
No!
It works!
No, it doesn't!
It absolutely does. 100%.
No!
Chat, if you agree, just say yes. I saw two people say yes.
You could have at least said Amal Goblin of Distortion. At least there's a G there.
Amal Coffin of Destruction.
No!
It works so well.
Fuck you!
It slides seamlessly in.
God, thank God we don't have any more of this shit.
So...
I swear, if you make any Thanksgiving puns, I'm going to kill you.
What rating do you give it?
Poop emoji. All right.
All right. I can only go up from
Chapter 3, Rebellious Spirit. So, we actually open this on a dream sequence, slash flashback, maybe? Of Rokumichi getting a little bit of a lecture from his love interest, whose name escapes me at this very moment, sorry. And she actually explains the uncanny valley. You know, when something is approaching being more human-like, you feel more of an affinity for it, unless you get uncomfortably close, and then you get repulsed by it instead. And the way that she explains it is, it made me think, you're the opposite, Rokumichi. Not entirely a demon, not quite human. A distortion. An amalgam who fell deep into the valley, and he sees her flesh peeling away and melting off as she says that. It's quite a gruesome image. Great for Halloween week!
Excuse me, ma'am. I believe you mean an Amal coffin who fell too deep into the valley.
Yeah, that's why he wakes up in fright. He's like, oh, she didn't make a terrible.
It's like,
it doesn't even qualify as a pun. It doesn't fit at all. As Rokumichi wakes up in what is basically a hospital bed. I like the little explanation of the title. There. It's an interesting justification for it.
It is.
Not one that I can ever.
Explanation
of a human psychological phenomenon is not my first choice for a shonen title.
Well, what's interesting is it's not too on the nose. Like, it's not like she's like, you're an amalgam of distortions. She's saying, you're weird. You're not human, but you're not quite demon. You're a distortion. You're an amalgam who felt like, if it were the exact words, it would sound too hammy and forced.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like that they managed to slide that in a little bit more casually.
So, Rokumichi is greeted by a strange-looking man who's got his hands all wrapped up. He's peeling an apple, for some reason.
That's what he does.
And so he greets him, and he's like, yeah, my friend's... He used to call me Gozu and stuff. Do you want an apple? And Rokumichi's like, this guy's kind of weird. And eventually, Goto apologizes on Eishu's behalf. And he makes, like, hand motions. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing. He's like, he could be like this, you know? And I'm like, what is he doing? Is he chopping his hand? I don't know what he's doing.
I think he's doing shadow puppets of some kind?
I guess.
He's carving the apple slices into animals. Because he's like, look, I made a rabbit.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Rokumichi theorizes, because he starts talking about the Zero Department, that he must be Eshu's boss, the one that we saw at the end of the last chapter. So eventually Rokumichi's like, are we in a hospital? Yeah, but we reserved this entire floor for the department. So yeah, random nurses don't know you got bone everything now, so...
How long have I had a boner? No, everything.
Bone everything.
So I don't have a boner is what you're... Should I be calling a doctor or not calling a doctor?
Well, I'm pretty sure he doesn't have a boner anymore. There's only so many things that bones can perfectly replicate.
I was going to say, he probably does. It's not the one he wants.
No. It's just going to be this weird thing sticking out of his pelvic bone.
Yeah.
Ugh. Gross. He talks about the demented doctor, Sarah Valen, the creepy woman that, of course, transformed Rokumichi. And, he does a little bit of talking about what she does, the crime organization that she heads, and so on and so forth. And Rokumichi is freaked out by some of this information that he's actually dropping about the technology that they've created. And he says, demon cells, like the ones inside you. By the way, we gotta talk about you. You can't go back to the life you had anymore. So, we're gonna change your face and you're gonna lose a different person. Okay! Let's get started on getting your new identity hashed out. He's like, what? No! I don't want to do this. You're gonna come and fill out this paperwork? No! I want to go see my family and friends! And Gojo just says very bluntly, are you sure about that? I mean, look at you. And it's a very nice... I don't know what it is about this panel that I like so much, this big full-page spread of Rokumichi sitting up on the bed. And of course, you can see his messed up arm and legs when Gojo says that. I don't know what it is about it. I think it's something about the way that his expression looks, the empty look in his eyes when the realization hits him like that. Mm-hmm. Gojo just, explains very simply, when people find out that you're alive, then your family's going to be in danger. They're going to, track you down, and you can't just go back to the way things were before. And Rokumichi says, but there's got to be a way that I can fix this. There's got to be a way I can make everything all right. And Gojo's like, nah. I mean, we don't know a whole lot about demon cells at this point. We've got to, in order to figure things out, it would take a lot of time and resources. And Rokumichi's like, oh, well, come on. I mean, I can wait until you find the solution, even if it takes years. And it's like, what, really? So the rest of your life, you would depend on us to do that for you? You're just going to be a huge burden on us for the rest of your life. No, our goal is to get rid of Psy, the criminal organization, is not to take care of you. We can just put you on the freaking pasture somewhere and you'll live a quiet life. You can keep your freaky body hidden away and, just stop. You won't have anything to worry about. But Rokumichi's still being stubborn. He says, no, I gotta have my old life back. And Gojo takes, a toothpick? It was something that he was eating the apple bits with. And he holds it up to Rokumichi's eye. And he just says, that's your problem, not ours. What a douche. So he leaves Rokumichi lying on the bed, but he just thinks of his friends and he thinks of his life waiting back for him at home. And he actually takes his phone out of his bag and he reads some of the messages that he got on it. I can actually read this very well. But the one that he sees specifically is one from his childhood friend, Yayoi. You better show up today. Remember our promise. And so he clenches his fist and also remembers the experiment that he killed, or that killed herself on his arm, mm-hmm. last chapter, telling him that when she said, don't give up just yet. And so he gets the turn and he stands up and he says, I can't give that up. And his body starts growing all sorts of different thorns and such and branches of bone. And he says, I might be a distortion or an amalgam, but I want to live as Rokumichi Kusaba. And Gojo says, oh, well, okay. Well, if you want to leave, the only thing standing between you and the door is me. So, what, are you going to kill me? And Rokumichi springs into action, and he jumps around the room. He dashes in, and his hand stops just short of Goto's face. And Goto's like, oh, come on, what are you going to do it? Are you going to kill me, or are you going to go along with things? I can, you know, get you your new face and stuff. And Rokumichi just says, I might be a monster, but I'm not a murderer. And he retracts his bones back into his limbs. So Goto says, well, I guess you were right. The boy's overly sentimental. So you can get your hands off the sword, Eishu. And Eishu is revealed to have gotten up behind Rokumichi ready to kill him. Which, I do like that they were prepared in case he really did try and bust out by force. It's nice that they have to have the displays of competence with the government group.
Yeah, that they're not just so stupid that they're like, I know how this would absolutely go. I know there's a chance it might not, but I'm so sure I'll let everything fucking fall apart.
Exactly. But Goto is confident in Rokumichi now. He believes, like, okay, you were right. He's fully in control. He's in complete control of his power. So that counts for something. Therefore, I have a proposition for you. Are you interested in working with us? Which, I mean, this is the end of our jumpstart, and I'm like, I swear to God, if this doesn't get added to the recap, it's going to be like,
Just make sure you fill out the survey, everybody. If you like the series, you gotta
like the series.
You gotta let them know. This is what you gotta do.
I mean, look, if we get Love Rush and we don't get Amalgam of Distortion, we're gonna be really upset.
you know, it would be a shame if we don't. I like the story. If we didn't get it, I would not be heartbroken. If only, I think, because we have The Promised Neverland, which also fills that niche of, like, a darker kind of story. But it would be a shame because I feel like this is a very good story that I would like to see continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this. I've liked all three of these chapters. And I really like the dynamic that they've got set up with the main characters, and it looks like he's joined the Men in Black now, basically. So we've had stories like that before where, oh, you know, you got caught up in this world, now you got to join the organization and stuff, but just the very human way that Rokumichi's been set up has really got me into this series, and so I'm digging it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's move on to Black Clover, page 83,
Dick,
Infiltration.
Don't you mean Dracula over? That's a twofer. See, because it's like Black Dracula Clover. You get it?
I mean, you could have just said Dracula over instead.
No.
But
Black Dracula over.
You should have.
That was a brilliant one. That was twofer. That was a twofer.
At the very least, you should have gone, blah, Dracula, you know.
No, that is too much. That's too much. Nick,
Nick, you're hitting the sweet spot.
I'm the master of puns here, okay? I know what makes a good pun, obviously. So, I'm gonna tell you.
Your last one wasn't even a pun.
It was a brilliant pun. You'll get it. It's a way homer. And I know you're at home right now, so maybe you'll get it when you go to work. I don't know, like a way worker or something like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you what's gonna happen. I'm gonna live the next, I don't know, 60 years of my life. I'm gonna die. And then I'm gonna discover that when you die, you don't go anywhere. You just, like, your consciousness just stays with your corpse. And we're gonna get to my funeral. My friends and loved ones, all three of them, are gonna be there. Then there's going to be crying and music playing. They're going to close the casket and start lowering me into the ground. I'm going to be like, coffin!
Oh! You know what? I get
about
it!
About coffin!
It makes sense! And then, wait, I have to come back! I have to come back! I have to find whatever subway Chris is working at now!
Just berating people. You can't get on that car!
God. Oh, boy.
Alright, so... You know, it's weird that we've got Amalgam of Distortion with the melting zombie girlfriend visual, and then the Land of Witches in Black Clover right around Halloween. Some crazy coincidences going on here.
Yeah. I, you know what? I'm starting to think maybe this is all planned.
Maybe. Possible. Maybe.
Just like the Digimon commentary.
Mm-hmm. Which you can go check out on our Patreon, and I'm sure that someone will probably sync it up on YouTube, because that's happened before. Anyhow, our main group has traveled to the Forest of Witches, unknowingly following in Vanessa's footsteps. No one has still told Vasta what the fuck is going on. Which is a point that gets raised, like, midway through the chat. At various points, rather. Up to about midway through the chapter. Because even in the beginning, Asta's like, you know, they're talking amongst themselves, and I was just like, why are we here? Guys, are you going to explain? Why am I here? I wanted to go do squats because I can't sit down for 5 minutes. They raise the point that if they're discovered infiltrating as intruders, they will probably be killed. So, adult woman in group whose name I haven't bothered to memorize because fuck you, Black Clover novel characters. Never gonna learn your names. Go fuck yourselves. You're never gonna be important, just like Rebecca. So...
I thought that was Rebecca for a moment.
Then you were like, oh no, she knows magic. Never
mind. I was like, Rebecca doesn't know magic. Stupid me.
Goddamn. She pulls out these invisibility cloaks, which she refers to as You Be Gone cloaks. I'm going to call them bagworms. And she tries to Nami them by saying, they're just 30,000 yus right now, but I can give them to you for 10,000 just now. And I was just kind of like...
Like, you don't even get to see her expression, but you can just assume what it is.
It's... I think that the only moment in this chapter that I actually like is where they're talking back and forth and they're shouting over each other, and Asta just goes, why are we here? And someone who is clearly Noelle goes, you be quiet, Asta. No, be quiet, just shut up.
Say what?
That one almost ruined it for me. They end up getting discovered, however, so they get chased around by these weird security golems that are flowing through the sky. They happen to spot a hole in the Queen's Manor, so they just fly straight through it to get it away. And they stumble across the scene of where the Queen got into the scuffle with Vanessa, who has been soundly defeated and is being stepped on by her. That was quick. Good job, Vanessa.
Well, I mean, we do have to assume that this lady's pretty powerful.
She's got a peacock dress. You better be powerful if you're gonna wear a peacock dress.
If you're gonna rock something like that.
Mm-hmm. Asta goes, who are you and what do you put off her, etc. The queen says, I am the queen of this forest, the mother of all witches. This girl is that girl there. She points to the woman in the novel group. The one who had the cloaks. Yes.
Well, yeah, remember she noted that she's from the country, which is last chapter.
Really? Because I haven't learned anything about them. I don't remember anything about them.
Yeah, remember
blocked it all out.
She's from the country.
They've all got their gimmicks, Chris.
She's from.
But I'm not going to memorize them. I'm not going to get used to these characters. Like, I know that you made the Dothraki because they've got to be important. I am refusing to allow these characters to be important.
Your sheer force of will.
Never.
One of them joins the Black Bulls, and you just never address them in recaps.
If Asta and Noelle and Fenrir die, and these three characters become the heroes instead, I will still never acknowledge that they do anything.
All right, anyway. Fair enough.
So, she's like, that woman there and Vanessa are descendants, my children. A child who won't listen to her parent is in need of a little discipline, don't you think? This is a domestic problem. I won't have outsiders interfering. I'm free to do as I please with these girls. And Asta is like, boop, boop, boop. Yeah, 911. I'd like to, can you connect me with child services? Yes, thank you.
You can still call child services on like a 23-year-old, right? I really like this because of something kind of subtle in that. When she has this big speech, she's like, I'll do whatever I want. I'll beat the shit out of these kids. The first person who actually responds to it is Fenrir. Like, that's the first person who we get shown showing anger to that. And, you know, Asta gets to be the one who kind of, like, goes in and be like, you know, I'm going to fucking dropkick you or whatever. I like that it shows Fenrir first, because it actually is kind of significant that he's the one reacting here. He and Vanessa are the two oldest, you know, non-leaders in the guild that are senior members. And since Fenrir's always kind of had a girl crush thing, it's kind of interesting to see his relationship with Vanessa actually seems to have more substance to it. So,
yeah, he had that big bond. He had that big bonding experience with her when they teamed up with Asta last week.
So I almost feel like this is a Sanji that has a chance of actually getting with Nami.
Oh, then he wouldn't be Sanji, though.
But I just like the fact that it was a little moment that says, hey, Fenrir actually really does get bothered by that, too.
Mm-hmm. Asta is like, I don't care if I can't use my arms, weapons, or anything. I'm just going to jump at you and kick you. And Fenrir uses teleportation magic to help put him in a better position. She's just like, whatever, flock of birds. And the Witch Queen goes, you are magic. Oh my God, I'm so sick of this. Hang on a sec. Let me just repeat again. Hang on. Let me repeat this now. This is chapter 83. Mm-hmm. It's been a year and a half. Stop it! There's something else with villains. God. I'm just going to ignore that she does that whole thing and just pretend that all she says is imperfect. At least that's a new gimmick that I can make wrestling references for.
Now, Nick, next villain comes in. Let's say he has mushroom powers or something like that. He kicks puppies. That's his thing. He kicks a bunch of puppies. Okay. And Asta gets really angry at him. He doesn't make a comment on Asta not having magic, but the entire time he's like, your stupid little headband. It's so stupid! Stupid, stupid, stupid! And he, like, smashes a mushroom into a puppy's face. But the only thing he hits upon over and over is he's like, you and your stupid little headband!
As long as every other antagonistic force from that point forward doesn't rag on Asta's headband, then that's fine. There are so many reasons to shit all over Asta. You don't have magic is so dead. I'm so tired of it. Can you imagine if all of Naruto was built around your family's dead and that was it? How much worse would Naruto the series be? If that was the only point they hit on, your family's dead, or you're the demon fox and I don't trust you. There were so many reasons that Naruto was rejected by people. Mostly that he was a little shit, and they observed that. There are so many reasons to like and hate Asta that aren't, he doesn't have magic. He's a character. Make more of the reasons why people don't like him. She could have easily just shit on him for just running in and trying to... how dare you try and disgrace my perfect form with such a lowly tactic? You know, you didn't even try to use magic in order to defeat me. You thought that, something so pathetic would work. But no, you need magic! So done with it. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. There's actually a little bit more to the chapter.
There is more to the chapter. Someone finally breaks what the fuck they're there for. And it's actually the queen, because she says, oh, this fool, she said that she would be my slave and live out her days here in exchange for healing your arms. So, like, why didn't anyone tell Asta that? Was this, like, the surprise? Like, okay, Asta, don't take your blindfold off. I can't. My arms are broken. That's the spirit.
Way to stay into the moment, kid. It hurts so much.
Where are we
much.
Going? I can't see.
My nose itches so much. Yeah, well, if you had magic, you could scratch it. Boom.
Oh.
I'll see your headband, stupid. Oh. He just starts crying. He's like, I rose above everything
else. I can't wipe my tears.
I rose above so much.
My nose is running. Can one of you hold up a Kleenex so I can blow my nose? No, if you had Kleenex conjuring magic, then this wouldn't be a problem.
She's like, I would, but I don't want to catch your ugly headband germs.
Oh, God. Anyway, the queen is distracted by her viewing globe as she realizes that invaders are approaching the country of witches. It's the Diamond Kingdom. Why are they there? I guess we'll find out soon. And they're being led by the real Diamond Generals, or at least three of them that we see, including Mars.
We see two of them. And then the
Creepy Face, Kokai is there, and isn't, the girl a general?
No, she's with the Midnight Sun. She's one of, Lich people. So it's the Midnight Sun apparently going up against the Diamond Generals.
Oh, so I guess the fight is happening near them for some reason? Or they're converging over the, converging over the forest. Huh.
Yeah, it just happens to happen in that area. But.
I got thrown off because the girl's got the gem in her forehead, so I just jumped to the conclusion that she was the Diamond King.
It took me a while to remember, but I believe that's the girl who has a salamander, who has the fire powers from Leash Group. Because you'll notice everyone on the left side, they're all in like those stupid cloaks and everything
Right. Right. Okay, I got you. And she's on a dragon.
Yeah. So, yeah, we shall see.
All right. Okay, let's talk about Boruto.
But Nick!
Go ahead, Chris.
Don't you mean Boruto Boo? Naruto Boo? The next generation Boon?
Your conviction got me on that one. Oh, boy. Number six, buffoon. Oh, God, my head now. Naruto continues to take on the invaders. They do a Frieza death ball thing. He summons Kurama, counters it with a tailed beast bomb, explodes it. Boruto remembers words about Sasuke, by Sasuke when referring to Naruto that he shouldn't, Naruto used to be a complete loser, but he became the Hokage on his own strength. He shouldn't study the Naruto of today, he should study the Naruto of the past. And then there's a flash of light, Boruto wakes up and realizes he passed out during the battle, due to the intensity of everything. He's in a hospital, Sarada is at his side as well as Mitsuki. He looks over and sees that Hinata is actually injured, and we learn that Hinata got to do stuff! Off-panel!
I don't know the movie at all. I'm assuming we're getting close to essentially where the movie, like, not wraps up, because I'm assuming that that person he fights at the beginning is essentially where, that's the final fight of the movie. but does the thing with Hanada actually get explained in the movie? I'm kind of curious if that's the case or not.
I wouldn't be surprised if they... Because the movies like to do that, you know, just give side characters a quick little action scene of, you know, just 15 seconds or so to have them show off. So I wouldn't be surprised if... Because especially because we saw some of the ones in the bleachers actually engage in the fights.
Some people are saying no, which has me kind of curious, because I'm like, doesn't it kind of take a lot out of this scene if it's like we don't actually know how or why she got hurt? Maybe it's something to reveal later, but I'm like, kind of takes a lot of punch out of the scene if you don't know why she got hurt. Like, it's sad now, and you think Boruto would feel kind of guilty about it, but... At the same time, you're like, she might have fucking just tripped on her own dumb, clumsy feet and like, ow!
She is very top-heavy. It's hard to maintain balance. I mean, I don't even necessarily think that we needed to see her getting injured, but I think that there should have been a hint as to what the injury was. Because the area that Sakura is healing with her medical jutsu is completely covered by blankets.
Yeah.
Like, you get no concept of what her wound is except the general area where it occurred.
Can I just note how much I just want to note how much I fucking hate this kind of healing, too. Like, I just look at that, and it's the stupidest fucking thing on the planet when it's just like, Naruto, please, we're doing a lot of important work here. Naruto, please!
Do you know how many pit points I'm using on this paladin?
It's just like, what do you... Like, I feel like any... Like, all, isn't it just the... I don't want to get into this. I don't want to get into, like, a fucking Naruto jutsu-specific thing. But let's just carry on.
I get your point, because they essentially treat medical jutsu experts like real doctors who require a special type of training. Mm-hmm. But then they just kind of use a heal spell.
Yeah. Get better. Oh, this injury is really severe. I'm going to have to do this for at least a couple days.
I'm going to have to use a lot of chakra on this.
I'm just, you know, like...
It's yeah.
It takes a lot of the impact out of the scene, because you're like, does she have a gaping hole underneath it? Is she just fatigued? Like, what is this?
At least with healing Kido and Bleach... They did at least imply that really complicated injuries needed some sort of special Soul Reaper surgery.
Yeah, and like
there were individual types of techniques that were at least implied. It wasn't expounded upon very much, but it wasn't just.
Yeah, and there were even times where they actually had to use science in some ways, with like Mayuri actually healing people. Whereas with
they brought up like, oh yeah, I know some specialty, so it's going to take me a little while and stuff. It was a special thing that you had to learn different techniques on how to do.
Because I think what really bothers me is, like, the introduction here...
Hang on! Dende, heal them!
Yeah. Because, like, you even see, like, Sakura's like, hang in there, Hinata! And fucking little Hinata's like, Mama, can you tell it's me? And you're like, wow, that seems really serious.
She's up and walking by the end of the chapter.
Yeah, I'm like, why did this seem so, like, is it a, like, it's just one of those things that just seems confusing for no reason to me. So I feel like it loses the punch it could have had.
They established that Naruto has been taken away by the Otsutsukis. Boruto runs out, you know, that typical, I am the little kid hero and I'm gonna run somewhere really upset kind of moment. And he trips over the box of chakra capsules, looks down at the device that's still on his wrist, and he angrily tosses it away. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, well, that wasn't actually the cause of this at all.
Yeah. Like, I insinuated before that it was Boruto's fault.
I know your dad was upset with you, but...
Yeah, it's not like they came because of that. They came because your dad had the Ninetales in him still.
Right.
It's going to happen either way.
Mm-hmm. Boruto goes into Naruto's office, and he thinks to himself, you told me that when Dad was a kid, Grandpa wasn't alive anymore, which means he grew up not knowing how fun it's supposed to be to spend time as a family, right? Why is my dad to be Hokage? All he does is sit at his desk and act important. Anyone could do it. Or he's remembering all the shitty things he said earlier on, basically. He's like, wow, now that my dad is actually not here... and can't come home, and he's not working in his office, now I feel bad. That took a lot for you to realize it, didn't it? So it really is like a 90s family plot, isn't it? I know you've made that joke before, but it's like, I didn't realize what I had until it was gone. I'm sorry that I wished that I could spend all day without my parents bothering me. Now that they've been kidnapped by aliens, I promise I'll never want that again. Now I gotta go save them.
Yeah, and that's when they pick up their fucking Nerf guns filled with alien acid. They're like, let's do this!
We're the kids in America!
Yeah, after that, like, while they're riding into space, vacation, all I ever wanted! It's just like, oh, we're getting all of them into this movie, sweet!
Side note, Jimmy Neutron is great. Love that show. Love the movie a little bit less, but it did have Patrick Stewart in it. But seriously, it's lame when it's applied like this. He sees Naruto's pre-time skip jacket on his desk, and he puts it on and looks in the mirror, and he's like, now I'm Indiana Jones. This is so lame.
Thankfully, Boruto himself says that.
Yeah, he looks at himself wearing his dad's jacket. He's like, that's lame. And Sasuke is like, damn straight, you little asshole.
I'm like, how did Sasuke get so much cooler when he got older?
Sasuke's the fucking best right now. He comes into the office, and he's like, well, your lie is exposed, you've been scorned, you've been stripped of your headband, you can't even call yourself a shinobi anymore, and you lost your father on top of that. It's actually pretty simple what happened to Naruto a long time ago, except you still have your mom and sister. And, Boruto looks to Sasuke and says, what did he do in times like these? And Sasuke says, it seems like you finally want to learn more than just his weaknesses.
Aww.
But you should ask him that yourself after we rescue him. And Naruto's like, what? So he's okay? Well, I can just see chakra, so he's not dead. And there's a... God, Sasuke's so cool now. Boruto says, why are you bothering with me so much? And Sasuke looks at him for a sec, and then he says, you're my number one student, aren't you? Oh!
So, Nick, I just want this in digital recording for all posterity. Are you a Sasuke fan now?
I'm a Sasuke in Boruto fan. Let's establish that.
I can cut out in Boruto and just splice the clips together.
Wow, it sounds way... I'm a Sasuke fan.
They're like, sounds edited, but it must be true.
I will believe it.
They can't put it on iTunes if it's not true.
Sasuke then says to Boruto, you're a strong shinobi, the real you, that is. If you put your mind to it, you'll likely even surpass Naruto one day. And Boruto doesn't believe him, and he says, nah, you will, since I'll be training that son of his. Just adds that little bit of, because I'm an arrogant fuck in there, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it's who he is.
Yeah. And he also says, also, you're an even bigger buffoon than Naruto. And he's like, what's that mean? It means you hate losing. And the other Kage suddenly appear. Chris, how many of them can you name?
Gaara.
Okay, good.
I know the one dude... Nah, I was going to say, I think I even know who he was, but I don't know his name, but then I'm like, nah, that's gone. I remember the glasses guy was the bodyguard for the Mizukage back
then. Well, all of them were bodyguards for the previous Kage, except for Gaara.
Oh, well, I didn't know the fucking Earth chick at all then.
I don't remember Shark Kid's name, but it's Kuratsuchi and Darui.
Okay.
Yeah. So the five Kage are there. And they're like, our sworn friend has been kidnapped, so we can't just sit around doing nothing. And Sasuke's like, actually, you can. That's kind of what the leader of a nation is supposed to do. We've got another ninja that can go after him. So, yeah.
In fact, it's actually very, very important that you guys don't go on the mission, because you are literally the most important person. This is why presidents don't go into war, because as cool as it seems, if they die, things kind of go to shit.
All right, Joe, the Prime Minister has been kidnapped. There's only one thing to do. I'm going to mount up, get my army together, and I'm going to go save him. okay, I got everything here, Brock. You go get him.
Well, deals.
Aren't you going to be concerned and try to stop me? No, I've always wanted to do this. Oh, your chair is nice and warm.
Where do you think you're going without your staunch ally, I, Winston Churchill? Together, we will save him. Generic person.
Well, nice to have you here, Ghost of Winston Churchill.
Pleasure. It is Halloween, after all.
Thank goodness all of the previous leaders of the world are ready to fight alongside you.
Only on today. Oh, yeah, Henry Kissinger, only on today will I be able to unite with you and fight.
Wow, Henry Kissinger, I didn't know you were dead. I'm not, but I've basically been a zombie for the last 20 years anyway.
Halloween does a lot of really cool things. It's pretty bitchin'.
I don't want to do it.
Where the fuck did this come from?
I don't want to do it because it's going to... But I love the idea of Hitler also coming in and is like, nine!
I'm going to advise with Julius Bell. Wait, why is the president...
It's time for an unface turn. People are like,
now,
I don't
mind music.
I don't think this guy deserves a face turn.
He's now like, he's mind music. It's all about the game.
Nine nonsense as he's goose stepping out with him in the big hero walk line walk.
I don't think we should be associated with this one.
Well, no, wait. Hang on a second. I've always thought that... I'm not saying that I will be his friend, but I think it would be great if we could be friends.
Oh, wait. Are you waiting for me, gracious Gandhi, to also weigh in on this situation?
Oh, God.
And don't forget... Minister of Kazakhstan, Ed Wynn is here as well. You weren't Minister of Kazakhstan. How do you know? Don't you know?
How did it get possible on Halloween?
Yeah, on Halloween, everyone's the Minister of Kazakhstan.
Oh, for fuck's sake, let's just finish this up. We're taking this tangent too far. Sasuke summons a Rinnegan portal and is like, this is the most number of people that I can transport with me, so we're taking Boruto with us instead of someone who can actually fight. And Hinata shows up with Sakura and Sarada and Mitsuki, and Sarada and Mitsuki are like, can we come too? No, we've only got room for one little kid, and we're taking the most useless one with us. And Hinata's like, Boruto, while wearing that jacket, you look just like Naruto when he was a little kid. Especially when you wear your headband that indicates you're disgraced and can never be a proper Konoha ninja. Go get your father back. And Sarada's like, air fist bump. And Boruto's like, I'm coming to end this chapter.
Yeah.
Some weird moments in this chapter, honestly.
It's an odd one, but I don't know. It gets the story moving, at least.
It does. It's so weird that we started off with, yeah, this is the story of Mitsuki and Sarada and Boruto, and now it's become the story of Sasuke and Boruto and Kuratsuchi and... Really?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't... These guys...
I get Gaara coming along, because Gaara and Naruto are fucking bros.
Yeah, they go back.
But... Do you even remember the deal with not Zetsu?
Yeah.
That was his thing, was he inherited one of the Seven Swordsmen's swords. And then they never really followed up on that, because all of them got defeated before he could really do anything with them.
I'm like, I'm waiting for when, not Mitsuki, Mitsuki? The white kid in Boruto's group.
Mitsuki,
yeah. Like, I'm waiting for that other shoe to drop. Like, we found out his backstory, but they haven't done anything with him. Like, there's still, like, what's his role? Like, when does Boruto the series actually become Boruto? Because as it is right now, it's just the, you know, a telling of the movie, apparently, which seems like it has a conclusion that doesn't involve those other two characters in this group at all.
I get the impression we're just going to get a different spinoff at some point. We're probably going to get spinoffs of Naruto Forever that follow this new cast.
Possibly.
So. But yeah. Oh, boy. Okay, let's move on to fairy tale, Chris.
But, Nick, don't you mean scary whale? Like a whale. Screaming whale. Like a whale of the damned.
I'll actually give you that one. That's actually a pun. So there you go. Okay, Chris is doing his dance of happiness, so I'm going to do the chapter, yeah, I guess.
I'll jump into this. This is actually going to be really quick because there's almost nothing in here.
But don't make it too quick because I need some fucking water.
All right, you get your water. I'll cover this. So last time, Makarov is dead, and Urza is really sad about it. And Natsu and Gray are fighting because... I don't want to say reasons. It really doesn't feel like there's much of a reason. They're both just really angry because the story has required them to be. So they're fighting, and then Urza stopped their fist. And now Urza shows up, and she's crying. And she's like, look at the human being in front of you! Is he an enemy or a friend? Think back! Remember when we were all growing up together! And there's a whole montage of flashbacks showing, like, the three of them kind of growing up together and being chumly and listening to shit like that. And it then cuts to Urza, like, shouting, and I guess they're remembering what it's like. Essentially, I guess she's essentially reciting a speech Makarov has given them before about my family. Like, how that's what family means, the people you care about, shit like that. And Urza's like, I love both of you. I love you both from the bottom of my heart, as she smashes them into her tits. And then they've solved every issue, because...
It's a really bizarre moment of unnecessary fan service. And I really... Literally, when I read that one page, I was just like, wow, hero, you know how to pick your moments, don't you?
Yeah, it's trying to be like a heavily sentimental moment, and yet it had to... You could have
squish.
Yeah, you could have easily had her do that pose and just not placed emphasis on the fact that their faces are squished into her tits.
Like, or have her be wearing one of her more conservative armors while she's doing it.
Yeah, like, why does she have to be wearing the fucking, like, pants taping thing top, whatever. Regardless, because she calmed them down... Now, of course, is the time for everyone to show up who could have resolved the fight before as well. Because that's when Yuffie is like, I'm not dead. And Lucy shows up, she's like, you didn't hurt me. So both of them realized what foolish fools of fools they were being. And this sucks ass.
Honestly, the only... The only part of it that I kind of like is when Natsu falls backwards and Lucy catches him. And that's when he learns that she's okay. You know, it's literally, that's the only part of this that I like, is just that one image of her catching him. Because it's a nice way of doing that. But, God, this entire... How long has this been going on? It can't be four chapters. I think it's been three chapters.
Of them just outright fighting, it's been like three or four.
Like, it's so...
It was forced. It's from the very beginning.
It's such a fairy tale way of doing this. And if you're ever going to do a moment where you're going to actually bother to build something up and take it seriously... This would have been it, you know? Your two big heroes bent on vengeance going up against each other because they've manipulated. So...
It was like it was just a requirement.
It's so half-assed.
Like a checkmark hero wanted to hit at one point. Heroes have a fight. And he couldn't think of a good reason, so he just manufactured one. Because neither guy has much of a reason to actually want to fight. Like, Gray's just angry because he thinks Yuvia's dead. And Natsu's just angry because he lost control for a moment and thinks he hurt Lucy in that period. either one of those situations could have been solved by any number of characters showing up and explaining the situation to one side or the other. And you didn't really get a sense of real aggression towards one another. Like, these two have been rivals, and they never really seem to indicate that there might actually be some legitimate hatred in that rivalry, too. Like, beyond, we're best friends and we love each other, but we fight, you know, because we're good rivals. There's never even a sense of, like, yeah, but underneath that, I really do fucking hate you or something like that. Which is something, like, real rivalries have at times, too. Like, just a sense of...
We've been doing Digimon recently. Well, not recently. Over the last about a year, we've been occasionally covering Digimon episodes as part of our commentaries. And the rivalry between Matt and Ty was something that brewed from the beginning. And there, of course, was a point towards the end of the series where things reached a head because they had been tricked and manipulated against each other, and they had a big fight. But even when things calmed down, they realized what had happened. It still drove a wedge into the group, and Matt left for a little while because they realized that there were underlying reasons for them to have fought against each other, and there were still unresolved feelings between them.
Yes.
Gray and Natsu just are kind of friends that fight.
Yeah. and it's weird because they address this as though, like, well, that's that. And it's like, but Gray still has the reason for your end. I need to kill you. That hasn't been solved. I'm sure that'll be explained away next chapter, and Gray being like, hey, your end, aren't you? And Natsu's like, yeah, but I can control it. And that'll be it, or something stupid like that. But it's still just that sake of, like, why is there nothing to this conflict? There's
or they'll be like, it's
nothing.
Okay, we're fairy tale.
Yeah, like, it's like, I mean, I said this essentially from the moment they started hinting this is going to be a thing, that it was just going to be a big letdown. But even then, even knowing, I'm still like, this is just so lame. Like, there's just nothing to this. If the only thing you want out of this was to see Natsu and Gray exchange a couple attacks back and forth, then you got that. If you wanted anything with something to, like, actually chew on, you're just shit out of luck, because there's nothing they could have developed out of that. And then they ended it in the easiest way.
This was a conflict that technically a character died to end, like, indirectly, because Makarov sacrificed himself, and that's one of the reasons that they stopped fighting. So, it really feels like this should be a really big deal. It feels like it should, but it really doesn't.
You'll never in a million years consider this to be anywhere on the par of, like, Goku and Vegeta, or Naruto and Sasuke. Like, they don't have that relationship. There's no tension there. So them having this big fight in a dramatic moment where things are tense just has nothing to it. It's forgettable. Like, it would have meant more if Gajeel fought Natsu at this point. At least that, I'm like, well, maybe there's still some unresolved tension from back in Phantom Lord and things like that.
Yeah, they started off as enemies, and Gajeel actually assaulted members of Fairy Tail.
Yeah.
And he still has some feelings of remorse over that.
Yeah, this one, I see it, and I'm like, this is a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's not actually the end of the chapter, because then we cut
over... There's something else that's stupid that happens. Not as stupid as the first thing, but...
So, August is basically just raffle-stomping everybody. He's using their magic against them. Speed can't counter him because he's faster. Pain magic can't counter him because he knows that one, too. Everybody's trying to figure it out, and then an attack comes against Urza's group. And Urza's like, everybody, get down! And that's when Irene shows up, and she's like, it has been a while, Urza. And Lucy's like, you know her? And Urza's like, I do not. Who are you? And she says, I am you, and you are me. Dun, 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 dun.
Wow, Chris, we've never had alternate versions of characters in Fairy Tail before. That's never a concept that's been explored.
Or is she a twin? Or, like, I don't...
Or from the future.
Or is this her time-frozen mom? I mean, if this is literally, like, a relative, then I'm already kind of annoyed, because aren't they doing that same trick with the other Dragnil character in the group, too? The white dragon? I don't know. Look, there's no way this is going to be satisfying. Just like this fight that we just had, there's no way Irene and Urza's conflict is going to be satisfying. I could essentially guarantee it. So at this point, it's okay. let's just find out.
Let's get to the part where Irene and Urza engage each battle or what the fuck ever.
Yeah. It'll be a battle where they keep taking off each other's clothes or they transform into costumes that are more and more suggestive. It's like, whatever. That's
Food Wars. Food Wars.
Nick.
Shukuyaki no Soma.
Don't you mean Ghoul Wars? Screamugeki no Soma?
Man, you were really struggling to come up with something that could top Spookagaki, didn't you? Chapter 188, Round 1.
Fight.
Hayama presents his dish, Southern Fried Bear. Get a little bit of a cover page of Hayama standing with Tsukasa and Rindo as a member of the Council of Ten, which is a cool little shot. And Soma raises an objection. He's like, where's mine? Hayama! Hayama! You said you would make some for me! Oh, fine. So everyone digs in, the judges as well as Soma. Soma observes that the dish itself, he's holding it in his hands, but it's actually hot to the touch. They make a few observations on the batter and everything. All of them bite into it. Clothes blowing off!
Yes.
I do like the little bit with Berta and Sheila, where Sheila is trying to analyze the dish, and she's even going to, like, the Kimoko compound and stuff, and discussing the herb and cayenne and everything. The oregano, and fuck it! I just want to eat it! Put it in my mouth!
Give it to me!
It's a good little touch. What's his name? I forget his name. Oh, well. Adult male judge guy.
Alice's dad. Just say Alice's dad. Oh, yeah.
Alice's dad, yeah. Declares that the dish definitely surpasses Yukihira's. Ayama goes into explaining his dish, how he prepared it with occasion spice blended and everything. Kuga's followers are like, oh my god, that's amazing. You know, his Hayama's skill is so great that it could eclipse Master Yukihira so easily. And Hayama says, or you sound surprised, even a human nose is capable of distinguishing upwards of 10,000 different scents. All my dish does is take full advantage of that ability. But Kuga is like, whatever. Really playing it down. The fact, but yeah, he's got a completely superhuman sense of smell. Only someone like him could have possibly made a dish like this.
What the fuck was that?
Ghosts!
Could have been. We get a flashback from Hayama's perspective of him heading into the testing facility, getting ready to prepare the dish. He declined specifically to have any personnel provided for him. And he's just like, nah, I got everything ready. I'll handle the practice dishes and taste testing myself. The bear dish I'm going to make is already assembled in here. And all the people who were present there, because they had an entire lab full of people ready to help him out in order to, you know, tip the scales in his favor, were like, what? He already knows what he's going to do, but he's only known the theme for a few minutes. Which actually leads me to believe that Hayama might have believed in himself too much. If you know
he
what
got
I mean.
Too confident.
He was too confident in his first choice, and unlike, because Soma experimented, we saw, and did a bunch of different things in order to better himself. Whereas I'm just like, nah, I know what I'm doing.
He's coasting on his laurels at this point. He's like, my nose is perfect.
And so we get a visual to continue the boxing metaphor of of Hayama laying in DeSoma and knocking to the ground with a big old uppercut. But interspersed in that, we also get a series of flashbacks from Hayama's perspective of Kurokiba and Soma bothering him, telling him how to teach them to get better. Him working with Kurokiba and Alice at the festival, observing everyone laughing and talking together. And if there is one complaint I have about this chapter, is I want this one panel to be a full page spread. The panel where we see Hayama in the past in the white jacket sitting content on a bench and Hayama in the black jacket walking away from him.
Yeah. That's a,
that's powerful. Such a cool visual. And I wish it were played up more. Because it's just this tiny little thing that's crammed in amongst all the boxing metaphors and stuff. That's not what pulls me into this conflict. It's not the, oh, they're exchanging blows. It's Hayama's personal conflict and what he's going through in this. That's the moneymaker of this for me. So, you know, I feel like this chapter could have been a lot better if this part of it, if this one page in particular were played up a lot. But continuing the boxing metaphor in the visual, Soma gets up from the blow and is ready to fight again. The judge explains, yeah, it's too early to pass judgment still. We've done only the first step, evaluating the fried meats on their own. We've yet to taste either with their dipping sauces. And yeah, I mean, we haven't gotten our absurd food reaction bit yet. So, we'll see where this goes.
One of them's honey mustard, Nick. Just wait.
I like the chapter, but again, it feels like it could have been... Just a little bit of tweaking.
It was still good.
Okay, we're gonna move on to My Hero Academia. I'm still getting used to having a bunch of new series added in.
But Nick, don't you mean My Hero Academia? Alternatively, do you like that one? I have another one. Don't you mean Mummy Hero Academia?
I thought the direction you were going in at first was going to be My Halloweenia or something.
It was close. Oh, it's a shame I only have 5 more of these to do.
We're not doing that fucking spring one, fuck you.
No, but there's still 5 of the series left.
Oh, God. Number 112.
Which also means I guess we should really pick up the pace.
Number 112, what's the big idea? You get more of a flashback from Yoarashi's perspective, him being a lame hero fan and everything, and his perspective on when he was taking the entrance exam to UA. And they did a race, and Yoarashi only barely came in second place to Todoroki, who was using his ice powers to propel himself forward. And so, yeah, Yoarashi just barely came in second. Oh no, wait, hang on a sec. Who actually won?
Yorushi, or,
Yorashi won?
Yeah, Yorashi.
Yeah, I think he does, because he says he won. Yeah, he's celebrating. He just barely gets ahead of Todoroki.
Yeah, because Todoroki coldly, doesn't matter who won. It's passing that matters. Fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah. Because even after Todoroki shoved him aside when he was trying to greet him outside, I was like, oh, hey, are you like Endeavor's son? That's really cool. And Todoroki's like, get out of the way, move. He's still not acknowledging him, even now. We cut back to the present where Deku is berating both of them for not getting along, of course, in the situation. And Todoroki suddenly finally remembers who Yuarashi is and that they had encountered each other before. Though granted, when you go from street clothes to dressing like M. Bison, I understand why you didn't make the connection right away.
Plus, there's such a much cooler character nearby to look at instead.
Todoroki is thinking to himself, I was only focused on rejecting Endeavor. So I wasn't focused on anyone around me. My past, my blood, that's not stuff I can just easily forget. Gang Orca goes after Todoroki and Yuarashi and uses shockwave ability on Yuarashi to take him down. I'm not sure exactly what happens. I think that he gets paralyzed, and then the gunners that are accompanying Gang Orca also take him down, too.
Yeah, basically.
Todoroki is distracted by that, so he gets paralyzed as well by Gang Orca, so they're both down for the count, almost. But the two of them are left to reflect on their failures and what they've been doing. Yuarashi is thinking to himself, I've become what I hated! Yeah, a little bit. Deku is trying to hold them off, but meanwhile, Shindo is recovered just enough that he puts his hand on the ground to cause an earthquake to help repel some of the villains. And he explains that he deals in sound waves and vibrations, so he's dealing with the shock of the Gang Orca dealt him a little bit better than most people would. He splits off from Deku, or Deku rather splits off from him as he leaves him behind and heads on so that they can work differently. Todoroki is still really beat up over the fact that he, you know, lost sight of what it meant to be a hero and so on and so forth. He thinks to himself, all that pointless showboating, zero teamwork, not a hint of cooperation, there's no way I'll ever be a top hero at this rate. But if you are thinking the same as me over there, he made my wind rise, then we'll swoop in from below. And the two of them use their quirks together, fire and wind, to create a giant pillar of flame around Gang Orca, attacking him together with the last of their strength. It's a cool moment, I think, where they just kind of know what the other's going to do because they've gotten enough feel for each other's personalities at this point. But, I mean, honestly, not a whole lot to the chapter.
I was actually kind of disappointed by this chapter a lot. It feels like the central kind of thing, the conflict they're trying to make this out of, isn't really entertaining. Like, I feel like there was a lot of potential here, but Todoroki and Gale Force's conflict just doesn't have much weight to it. Like, we joked about last week how it was kind of lame that, like, Yuarashi's reason for hating him was you were, like, your dad gave me the cold shoulder and then you gave me the cold shoulder. And they keep trying to make it, like, this devastating thing. And I get what they're kind of going for. It's Todoroki hasn't completely gotten over the fact that he's being compared to his father and, you know, saying, like, you're not so different after all. But it just, for all the buildup to it, and to put it, like, forefront in this arc, there's just nothing there. And in this chapter, it just doesn't, like, when they team up and use their powers together, like, well, maybe they can still work out together after all. Like, maybe they can team up. It's just, like, there's nothing really there. Like, I would like it if they actually just disliked each other, or if there was, like, more of a rivalry to them. Like, this moment just doesn't have much kind of payoff to it, I suppose, just because I don't feel like their conflict was really worth it.
I think that there needed to be... I think that the stuff specifically between Todoroki and Yuarashi at the testing site could have worked if the reason why he resented Endeavor were better.
Mm-hmm.
If it were something like he didn't take the time to help out someone who really needed him. Or, you know, he
Or he didn't help out.
He refused a heroic task that was beneath him or something like that.
Or he didn't help out in an emergency because he was too busy fighting. This entire exam, this part is about that. Like, right. Fighting, but at the same time, protecting others. And I don't know what situation you could do that he'd save people with fire, but you could invent one certainly, or just show that in that moment he chose to fight instead of helping civilians, and that's what Yoroshi hates about him, and he sees that same person inside Todoroki. That could work.
So then when he felt slighted by Todoroki, he just associated that with the recollection of the actually bad thing that Endeavor did.
Yes. That would work 100%. I'd be absolutely invested in something like that.
He didn't sign my autograph.
Yeah, it's just that feels lame, and because of that, everything else kind of trickles down in like a bad cascade. Like, I'm not saying this is awful or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, I just have no real investment into this.
Needs some tweaking. Mm-hmm. It's hit the Promised Neverland.
But Nick, don't you, wait, no, we're on One Piece.
Oh yeah, you're right. I'm off. Throwing off. One Piece!
But Nick, don't you mean One Creepies? One Creepies? Creepies!
Chapter 143, Vin Smoke Sanji. Last time, through the combined efforts of Nami and Luffy, Cracker was defeated and sent flying. And, in fact, this chapter opens up with him continuing to fly and being sent...
Peace.
Shut up. All the way into Whole Cake Chateau, where he collapses a building after smashing into it. I like the little bit where we cut to inside Mom's palace, and they're going over, oh, yes, General Katakuri, General Smooth back. Oh, good. All three of them are back together. Isn't Cracker back yet?
Oh, Cracker, you're here. Clean yourself up. Wash up before dinner.
We're introduced to more of Big Mom's kids, including, like, the final boss of Candyland, it looks like.
It's not the final boss. It's the molasses guy, though. Oh, fuck, what's his name?
Yeah, the molasses one.
I used to play the shit out of this candy game, Candyland game on the PC, and he came up all the time. Fuck, now I have to look up the lore of Candyland. Hold on a moment. Candyland Wikia. All right.
So Luffy collapses.
Oh, there is a Candyland Wiki. Sweet.
Sweet. Luffy collapses and tries to catch his breath, and Nami observes, are you slimming down already? And Luffy's like, oh, Gear 4 uses a lot of energy.
I'm stupid, Nick. His name was Gloppy, of course.
Oh, boy. Pound says, we're in fucking trouble now because General Snack was defeated. Cracker's forces, and When General Snack was defeated, Cracker's forces bled out the sea with their numbers, and Linlin's rage of vengeance summoned a storm. From what I heard, the enemy ships were sunk in a blink. Linlin can control the weather. In her left hand are the lightning clouds of Zeus. In her right hand is the sun itself, Prometheus. Presumably this is linked to her soul imparting abilities, which implies that she can do some really insane shit with it. I mean, she is one of the four emperors. It makes sense.
Maybe she has two devil fruits.
Eh. It's possible. Blackbeard had to figure out how to do it somehow.
Yeah.
They go over what they're going to do, discussing the whole situation with Sanji, and Luffy's like, look, I don't care what the hell she's going to send after us. We can't let Sanji join Big Mom's crew. He should be with us. We've got to get there. We've got to take Sanji back. And he's like, carry me there! And they get on one of the homies and start going there on the giant tree. So there we go. They lose contact with Chopper and Carrot because they've been speaking to them through the Shattered Mirror, but somehow they just lose connection. The mirror loses its power. Meanwhile, Luffy slims all the fuck the way down. And he's hungry again.
Yeah.
Because he's asking for meat in his sleep. Oh, Luffy. And then they just come across a carriage carrying the Vinsmoke family. And so they see that Sanji's there, and Luffy's like, Sanji! And just runs up to the carriage. And Nami is also rushing to greet them. Sanji's brothers are like, a woman!
I do like that Sanji's brothers are just as much of a horn dog for Nami as they are.
Yeah. So there's a tense moment as Judge's men prepare to attack Luffy. He's like, we're here to come and get you. And Sanji is remembering that if he tries to escape, that of course his hands will be blown off. So after a little while, he just kicks Luffy off of the carriage and says, get lost, you miserable, inferior pirates. My name is Vinsmoke Sanji, and I am a prince of Germa Kingdom. Forgive me for hiding this from you. If I had told you, it would have only made you self-conscious. The difference in stats between us is obvious. Here I have all the money, soldiers, and servants I can use. If my choice is between returning to you and your chuckle-headed crewmates and living in luxury here with Big Mom's beautiful daughter as my wife, which do you think will make me happier? There's no comparison. Stop taking that letter seriously. I'm not going back. So, Luffy, of course, gets pissed off about this. His brothers start to interfere, but Sanji says, no, I'm going to drive them off myself. And, of course, this is his way of protecting himself and his crewmates, but he does a nice little speech there, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Got Luffy really pissed off, didn't he?
I mean, to be fair, that's what Sanji's proven himself to be. He's great at improvising and putting on an act.
Mm-hmm.
It's done. Not the first time he's put on a persona. I do like this. You still get the sense that Sanji doesn't really know, like he doesn't really have a plan quite yet. But I do like that they're almost playing into this idea that we might have a fight between Luffy and Sanji. And, you know, unlike Fairy Tale, I'm like, this one, you can actually see the reasons why it would happen. It should be interesting to just see what happens. I just think this was an effective way to kind of get to that point. And I like even...
I anticipate it won't be a long fight, because Luffy did state to Cracker that, you know, he just wanted to hear it from Sanji's mouth. So, presumably they'll have maybe a little bit of a conflict back and forth. Maybe reinforcements will arrive, and Nami and Luffy will be forced to retreat and regroup and do next.
Yeah.
Or hell, maybe they'll get taken prisoner.
Who knows? It's probably too soon for anything necessarily to happen.
Maybe Sanji's hands will get blown off. Probably.
I'm like, wow, that's pretty dark.
Okay, now let's do the promised.
But Nick, don't you mean the promised Deaderland?
It's not too bad.
Yes. I think that's
chapter 12.
I think it's number 2 on the list.
Chapter 12, Traitor Part 2. Last time, Gilda and Don were brought in on the scheme and fed false information to see which of them would try and betray them. Emma has followed Gilda as she snuck away, and Crone is taking her into her office. And Emma is listening in outside the door. She can't see inside what's going on, but she's trying to figure out, you know, why she is actually doing this. We get inside of Crone's mind as she thinks to herself, I will not change my plans. That woman is lying. Only the older girls take care of the youngest. There's no such rule at this farm. That is Isabella's own rule. She wants to make a mom out of her own children. Not me. That girl, Emma, is her first choice. So, I'm glad that something we actually discussed, one of our about... that actually came up. Although, I do get a fairly big called it later on in terms of something else.
I do too, technically.
You do too. Crone is trying to get Gilda to talk to her, and Gilda's like, oh, you want to know about the issue? I'm not worried about anything. And Emma is shocked to to hear this, and we get a flashback from Gilda's perspective that Crone has been trying to get Gilda on her side for a while now, always doing, oh, you can always tell Big Sister if you're worried. Oh, you look kind of upset. You can come to my room tomorrow night if you want to talk about it. You're so sad looking. And so Gilda racks this all up by saying, I appreciate you were concerned for me and that you checked in on me so many times, but I'm okay, so you can leave me alone. Please excuse me. And Emma, of course, is ecstatic to hear about this. That's all that this was about. That she wasn't the traitor. She's so happy to know that. And Crone, though, makes a gambit by saying, so Emma told you everything then. Gilda, you found out everything, didn't you? And Gilda freaks out about this. And she's trying to figure out what has tipped her off and what she's going to do if finds out that she knows the truth. And Emma is listening in the door. She's like, no, she's just bluffing. She's just trying to trick you. She doesn't know anything. So when Crone is like, oh, come on, we could join hands, let you go and just you. And Gilda says, I don't know what you're talking about. I was just fighting with Emma and we made up. Everything's fine now. She even shoves her physically away. But just before Gilda leaves, Crone makes one final attempt and she just whispers something in her ear and then wishes her good night. Gilda walks out of the room. Emma immediately gives her a big hug and says she's sorry that she ever suspected her. Thinking about what Crone whispered to her, which is, if you think Emma is lying to you, come back to me. And of course, Emma is lying to her. They're not telling her the whole truth yet about what's going on. So there is the potential they're leaving the door open for maybe Gilda could intentionally or unintentionally end up bitching about them. Crone is like, yes, I've planted the seeds. Next, I have to.
It's the weirdest scene. She just like slams her face against the ground, like ass up in the air, and is watching the ground. Essentially, I don't know how she's doing it, but she's following footprints people have made, and just like showing where people are going, navigating that, and she's trying to use it to see who's moving around at night.
I love the sound effect of her putting her face to the floor is splat, which splat. Indicates, yeah, it seems like she just smashed her ground.
Ow! All right, now where are those footprints?
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. Norman and Ray have a bit of a conversation about what happened. They now know, of course, that Crone is acting independently of Mom, and they're like, so should we be happy that they're not cooperating, or upset that now we've got two separately operating entities to worry about that oppose us. They talk a bit about the footprints that Crone is trying to find. They now know, of course, that Gilda is not the traitor for certain. And then Norman raises the point of, hey, you know, why do you think the traitor is betraying us? Which I misread the first time that I was reading it when I was just like, I thought he was asking, why do you think the traitor is betraying us as opposed to the traitor's reason? Why do you think that there is a traitor who's betraying?
Like, well, Norman, smart, third tied for smartest person in the class. I think they're betraying us to betray us.
I think that they're betraying us because they're the traitor. Oh, God. But, you know, it just, you know, brings up the obvious idea of probably just so they're hoping to be spared from being shipped out so that they can live. Emma is leading some of the little kids, and now Don and Gilda have caught on that this was training so that they can run away. Norman brings Emma over to talk privately with her, and they talk about the traitor as well, and he asks her, if there really is someone who is willingly acting on the behalf of the demons, would you leave that person behind or take them with us? And Emma says, I take them with us. Because if we can escape, that person's life might not be guaranteed anymore. They would still be in danger, and I want to save everyone. And the demon says that I would force them to come with us. So after hearing that, we get another conversation between Norman and Ray. Norman is checking around his bed, and so Ray's like, oh, okay, is it here? And Norman's like, no, the rope's missing. And Norman's like, okay, well, let's check the bathroom. No, no. If it was still there in the ceiling of the bathroom, the fake rope was. And so Ray says, ah, so that's confirmed then. We know that Don was the traitor because only the rope behind my bed is behind your bed is gone. And Norman says, the source of the information, the traitor is you, Ray. Dun, dun, dun. I'm not sure exactly where this is going, but I'm so happy that at this point they get Ray's. It's nice to have, I mean, you know, we must suspect everyone doesn't work unless you actually have to suspect everyone. And so to have this brought up was really good.
The only person I don't suspect is Emma. Because even after this...
It can't be Emma.
My logic's like, Norman might be the traitor. Because he asks for, what do you think? Like, would you take that person along, even if they don't want to, even if they're betraying us?
Right.
So I can even think this kid might, in his own way, like be trying to play that. But yeah, apparently, as it appears, Ray might be the traitor.
I mean, what we know about the three of them is... We don't know a whole lot about Ray. We know that Emma wants to save everyone, which pretty much, unless betraying them means that they'll be protected, means she's not the traitor. And I think that that's a very, very remote possibility. Norman's whole thing has been protecting Emma and winning.
Yes.
And that doesn't necessarily mean protecting everyone. So I do definitely see your point that it's definitely a slim chance for all three of them that they're actually acting specifically against the group. Maybe Ray is acting independently and feeding information to Crone and them. Maybe he's carrying forward with his plan for only the three of them to escape. Maybe he's trying to make them see that there's no way that they can take everyone along with them because a traitor's working against them, so we've got to get out while we still can.
Or maybe
there is a kid who's working for the demons.
Or maybe this is part of his plan to get those chips removed.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
So
it's not as simple as I think it's being presented to us either way, but this is a very interesting way to end the chapter, because I said last week, I'd be like, oh, it would break my heart if Ray turned out to be the traitor, and boom, lo and behold. So I need to stop making predictions about character that I like, apparently.
Yeah, I guess so. Chad will get to fight.
Any day now. Him and Elfman.
Let's move on to Red Sprite.
But Nick, don't you mean Red Fright? That was a pretty good one, I thought.
Chapter 9 Crusaders.
That was a great one. Give me my dabs. Give me my dabs.
They're plasma soldiers. They're trying to fight Alfred.
Give me my goddamn dabs.
They're named very creatively. QF5 and QF4 and QF3 and QF2 and QF1. Yay. Alfred fights against QF5 one-on-one. He is a neural type, similar to Tatsu. Stop looking sad. He's pushing Alfred pretty heavily because they're in close combat, which neural types have an advantage in. I feel as if there is an explanation for these different power types that we're going to get, like in full detail to explain how everything works, like World Trigger style, very explicitly. We haven't gotten that yet, so...
I don't know if we're ever going to either.
Alfred is pushed pretty hard up until Tatsu and the Red Sprite just fucking dive bomb out of the sky and pull up just before hitting the ground. Tatsu pops out of the cockpit and is like, stop beating him, my friend! The other four soldiers all show up and they say, oh, look, it's our top priority targets. And QF5 says, don't put in. We can't underestimate him because he's also a neurotype. And his specs rival our own. If you fight him one-on-one, you won't leave unscathed. And so we're all going to have to take him on at once. And we get this two-page spread introducing the other four soldiers, giving them all close-ups. And then Tasha just hits them all and just crushes them all at once. And that's the end of the chapter. It went by really quickly, honestly. Because it was all action scene and it was all pretty straightforward action. But
essentially, yeah.
I liked it, but eh. I'm not going to do Spring Weapon anymore.
No.
Fuck it. So. Toriko!
But Nick, don't you mean Horror Eco?
Oh, that's why you didn't use horror before.
See, Nick?
It's okay, fine.
It's getting better and better. Can I get daps for that one?
What are daps?
Daps, Nick. Like, come on, give me the daps.
A little fist bump? Yeah, don't call them daps.
They're called daps!
No. Sounds too much like dabbing. I hate dabbing. Gourmet 392! The full course of rage. Keisha and Toriko fight. They fight. Hard. With world-destroying techniques and stuff. Giant fists and... Toriko unleashes his full course of rage. And unlike Midora, who declared that his appetizer and soup and fish and meat dishes were his memories with Froze, Toriko just declares them to be different attacks. It's not nearly as hammy. But he uses all of his signature techniques. His nail punch, his fork and his knife, leg knife, and so on and so forth. But Acacia declares as he's being attacked, "You can't destroy me! I can't be broken! No matter how far they swerve, the hardest cement appetite will never disappear!" And he starts to try and eat, Toriko. He's even sucking away all the food luck that was imparted on him by Star June, intending to eat all of it and devour it all so that he can kill off Toriko, and Acacia's body begins to swell up as he eats it all. And in fact, he's not just eating the food luck from Toriko, but all the food luck from everywhere! All the food luck in the world! And Parrot declares, "It can't be! Even appetite has its limit! Acacia's going to burst!" And Acacia says, "Appetite has no limit!" And then he punches Toriko in the chest.
And then credits. God comes down then, because he's dead and has to wipe everybody out.
He has to bring his army of angels down to kill off Satan and Acacia. Acacia declares, "I win!" And then he looks and he sees that, Toriko's final food demon has appeared and absorbed the blow and is beginning to absorb Acacia's black cells. I don't know what it is. There is something about the smug fucking expression on this thing's face that I really like. It's just like, "Oh, you're the world-devouring demon that is the ultimate enemy of the series? That's cool. You're overeating. You've been overeating for a long time. Hey, Toriko, this fight's over, and Neo's about ready to throw up. So, but Toriko, you've forgotten the most important phrase to wrap this up with. I love that phrase, so do it. Now, Toriko." And Toriko slings his hands together and says, "Thank you for the meal," as the food demon says, "See you later." And Acacia's head explodes.
He finger pokes of dooms him.
I have to wonder, because we have gotten no word that Toriko is ending soon. Acacia's head just exploded after Toriko unleashed his full course meal of rage and his final demon appeared to strike the finishing blow. This arc seems like it's winding down. Can you go anywhere from here?
I think you can, actually. I think you go into space.
I was literally thinking the same damn thing.
They go into space
and they find the fucking race that created Neo.
Yeah, like you'd have to go to that. Because I don't think it's ending. Like, there's not a conclusion necessarily here. Like, there's still a lot left unanswered. Like, we still don't have, I feel like, everything about the blue demon in Nia or in Toriko, and then this final demon. Mm-hmm. This is like the third, like the only. There's only been like three consequential things that thing that guy's even done. Like, considering Ogre literally died a little bit ago to give Toriko his power up, I still feel like there's more to do essentially, and to get across. But I don't know.
It's weird though, also because, I mean, Toriko's full course meal. It's complete too. We know what all of it is. Mm-hmm. So presumably he's going to, you know, get to eat Neo or whatever, and then that's the end of it. You know, we'll get the final bit. But I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not saying that this was a bad finish to this, but it definitely doesn't feel like a series conclusion battle.
This part came out of nowhere. Like, I didn't feel like after last week, I was like, man, what happened? Like, that's going to be the wrap-up to this entire fight. Like, I thought there was still a lot more to go through of, like, back and forth and things like that. Like, you start this chapter, and it's just like, I'm going to waste my entire full course of rage on you. And you're like, oh, shit, I thought Toriko was actually going to, like, bite him and get the full course menu and power all the way up. It's just like, boom, now we're ending this. Like, okay. Like, I kind of like that his full course menu was a series of attacks as well. Like, I thought that was kind of cool and cheesy in that cool Toriko way, but... I just didn't expect it to end in this chapter, basically.
It is something that definitely is kind of bothering me, because it feels like it's not ready to end, but it also feels like it can't go on. And, I have my doubts either way.
We shall see.
I guess we'll have to wait and find out. Let's move on to... finish up with World Trigger now.
But Nick.
Go ahead, Chris.
Don't you mean World Trick or Treat, Gur? Hold on a moment. I have an alternative.
God damn it.
Now, Nick, don't you mean Weird Trigger? Now, hold on a moment, Nick. I have an alternative.
How many do you have?
This is the last one. This is the best, so. But Nick... Don't you mean Warlock de Trollger? Dot 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 boo.
World Trigger to my heart, dot dot dot, and Bookdoor. Last time on World Trigger, Osamu got ready to just move into the Tamakoma branch and discovered that he was actually taking a room that had once been occupied by someone named Kido, whom we find out was actually Commander Kido. And thus we get Chapter 162, Tamakoma Branch, Part 5. Osamu, of course, is very intrigued by this, and as he goes and finds that it has been entirely cleared out, as there is a photo in a desk, a big group photo, of people gathered outside of Tamakoma headquarters. And he recognizes some of the people in it. He sees Jin, who looks pretty much the goddamn same. He sees Director Rindo, who looks younger in my nice beard, and a much younger Konami, who's lashed around Rindo's waist. And he also spies Reiji and Yuri, which is probably my favorite part of the picture, because Reiji is still staring at Yuri like,
Hey.
How haven't you asked her out? You've known her for like 6 years. I guess he's too young for her, I don't know. So he ends up talking to Yuri about this, and she says, oh wow, it's so nostalgic. Gosh, I look so young. Then he inquires about Kido and the room, he's like, yeah, I guess this is his picture, but I mean, he's not in it. And she says, sure he is. Look, right here. Wink. And Osamu does not recognize him at all. I mean, now that, of course, he's pointed out, you can definitely see, yeah, same facial structure, sure, he doesn't have the scar. And he's like, yeah, I guess he didn't have a scar back then. And someone's like, no, that's not the thing. You don't understand. He's smiling. Big, happy smile.
When did this happen?
Osamu asks if he used to work there, and Yuri explains, well, actually, this building used to be just Border HQ. This used to be all of Border. Before Border was revealed to the public, the 19 people in the picture are the original members. It was much livelier and more fun back then, and now it's so lonely. But it'll be lively again since you guys joined up. Aw. And Osamu asks about all the other people who used to be in Tomoko and aren't now, and she points them out. Yeah, these people moved to headquarters. Kido, Kiriyama, Shinoda is there. As for the rest, well, let's see. There's this girl, Matsu. She left Border. She's an ordinary citizen now. Okay, what about the other 10 people? They all died. Yeah.
I like that it's they all died, and they just start blocking their photos off, like, yeah, you know, a lot of people died. Not every one of these is going to be, like, some big dramatic, like, fucking thing. Like, not all of these characters are necessarily going to be plot characters. Like, as I mentioned, like, some of them became Black Trickers. And we know that there are some people in this photo that are dead, and that is a catalyst, a motivation for different people. But I like that there are, like, 19 people, and I'm like, hey, not every one of these characters, too, has a whole big story that we're going to be able to get to. Like, it's a war. They're casualties.
It's a bit like the speech that Kakashi gives to Naruto and company, like, yeah, this is how we remember all the fallen ninja who gave their lives. Mm-hmm. This is what you get. You know, you get put in a plaque and have lost friends whose names are here. So, yay. There's also some explanation of actually the emblem of Border, which is pretty cool. They're like, yeah, see this line here? Yeah, that's a border between the two worlds. She talks about how Kido is different now. He walks a different path from ours. In order to recruit more people for Border, he now claims that the neighbors are our enemies, but for us, our purpose of the old Border was to connect this world with neighbors, and his stance is contradictory to ours. Yeah. So.
There's one person in this photo that I find particularly notable.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's the one who's in between Shinoda and, or not Shinoda, Kido and, Rindo. That's somebody who's disappeared, but you notice, like, Rindo has his hand on his head.
Yeah. You know, the big note of, yeah, we lost 10 people. Is it because, you know, someone has been lost, that some of them have changed? But, yeah, the guy that, the director is, yeah. But Rindo is the one who's got his hand on the guy's head.
I'm wondering if that's maybe, like, related to him in some way, too.
Mm-hmm. So they drop all this on Osamu, and he now understands more about Tamakoma, that, you know, this used to be all of Border, and now they're kind of different from the rest of them. And Yuri kind of wraps the whole thing up before they interrupt it by saying, no one knows if another massive war like 5 years ago will break out again. It's reassuring to have more people with us, but the real problem is with us for not coming up with a better way than Kido's. And then Konami comes in and is like, oh god, where did you find this? No! Why are you looking at that?
You know how much, like, I relate to that, having an older sister? Every time we find a photo, she's like, ah! Oh, why is this always from my fat face? I'm like, but I love it. It's from my super skinny face.
Yuri's like, oh, Kyrie was so clingy to my uncle back then. It's so embarrassing! We then cut over to Yuma and... and Hughes, who have just finished up their solo battle, which Yuma won 12-8. And, I like the exchange that they have as, Cronin. It's like, Oh, it looks like Yuma's better than you.
Ah,
like, yeah, for now.
It's not what he sounds like, Nick.
Looks like Yuma's a little bit better than you, my dear bull.
There you go.
Yeah, for now. And then Yuma does the fucking crane kick stance. He's like, ultimate grasshopper. If that doesn't show up in another rank war, I want him to announce his ultimate grasshopper move at some point. Oh, God. By the way, someone pointed out last week to us that Yuma's duck face looks a disturbing amount like Trump's face at certain points. And I joked, I think we have a new voice for Yuma. And although it would make it very easy to do some jokes, I have ultimately concluded no, because Yuma is too humble and likable. And
if this was like Yuma from where he appeared to be at the start, where he's just like
right.
shoved himself into everybody's throat, but now like he just has a joke this chapter about like ultimate grasshopper move, like he's doing like the fucking Karate Kid's pose. How can you be that mean to him and give him Donald Trump's voice at that point?
Boda is so terrible right now. We're gonna make Tamakoma gray again. We're gonna kick all the neighbors out. Oh wait, shit.
We're gonna build a big wall. We're going to build a border. A border that's going to block them from coming into our country.
We're going to make Geftokrator pay for it. They will do it. Trust me. We're going to make them pay for it. They're going to use all their golden gooses to pay for it.
I'm going
to
grab them by the pussy if they don't. They can't stop me. That's what you do when you're famous. You grab countries by the metaphorical vagina.
All these other people say they can't do it, but I can tell when they're lying. And trust me, folks, they're lying.
Yeah. I have a side effect. My other side effect, every woman wants me to have.
I've got the best side effect.
It's the best.
I've got the best grasshopper moves. I've got the ultimate grasshopper moves. All my grasshoppers are the best.
Trump,
see?
Trump
really grass, easy.
Trump grasshopper but, business goes under.
They've got to take Yuma's name off of everything. We make it so easy, but we can never, like, do, like, the stuff that Yuma's actually doing in that place. It's just a bunch of jokes. Chica shows up, says, hey, I'm going to Border HQ. You want to come with? And, Yuma is like, yeah, sure. They also ask, hey, Hughes, you want to come with? And Hughes says, I'm a secret weapon. I shouldn't do that. It seems like he's taking such pride in it, though.
Well, I do like that, though. He's like, I shouldn't go. Like, I'm supposed to be your ace in the sleeve, so don't have me around. Like, the less attention, the better.
Yeah. And the chapter just kind of ends, because Yuma says, yeah, I'm not going to need a ride back, because I'm going to hang out at Kagura's place, so I'm not going to need to go, but I'm not going to be joining you guys for dinner. And they show up at Border, and he and Chica say goodbye, meets up with some of the attackers, and then Chica goes off to meet with her sniper friends. That's it.
Yeah.
Her sniper friends and the cat.
Yes. Well, of course. The cat's always there. I like how the cat's eyes are just peeking above the panel, too. Like it's plotting things beneath it. But it is worth noting that Yuma's meeting up with essentially the two big attackers in his next match.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they're going to be doing some training beforehand and just getting to one another a little bit better. But it's nice to get to a little bit more of Kagura.
Yeah.
He needs
So, I mean, it was an alright chapter. It was very weird to get this big info dump at the beginning and then trail back into Tamakoma's everyday shenanigans we had last chapter.
It was nice,
but it's so weird to have such normal, quiet stuff.
It was exactly what you said last week. We were like, there's that weird moment where Chica's like, could you help us get the beds fixed up? And she's like, okay. And they start doing it. You're just like, this is weird. I had that exact moment where Rinji's driving them around. He's like, do you want me to pick you up at 6? Like, yes, please. Thank you. And then it's like, I don't need a ride. I'm going to be getting a ride back.
So tell
okay.
Tell everyone I won't be needing dinner.
That's it. I'm just like, all right, fair enough.
You're like half expecting that it's going to like close in on his face. I'm going to be going to Kagura's house. My evil machinations.
Or like a spike juts up in front of the truck and flips it over in the last panel. Or something crazy. Like they pan out from the car and they're in Monster Town or something like that.
Maybe that's what this is all building to. Maybe this is trying to get us used to these quiet moments so that we drop our guard when one comes up and then suddenly it's interrupted by something horrible.
Like, I want to be looking into this panel of the car driving off a distance, and I start looking at it really hard. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute. What's that in those bushes over there? And I start getting a little bit closer in, and I'm like, oh my god, you can see a clown in those bushes. and that's the preview.
I said the clown. Don't worry about the clown.
I'm going to get rid of the clowns. We're going to build a wall. It's going to keep the clowns out. And the clowns are going to pay for it. You like to build a lot of walls. Our company's called Border. A lot of walls are going to be built.
The great thing about the wall for the clowns is you can make it only look like it's going to contain about 20 of them, and you can stuff like 1,000 of them in there. Saves a lot of material.
Yes.
Have illegal aliens in it, but then say you're going to get rid of the illegal aliens. Very easy. Oh, boy. So that is going to do it. On that note, that is going to do it for Luke and Mike Recap this week. Had some really weird tangents this time. Thank God. So, you have a recommendation for next time?
I do.
Okay. But before we get into that, we're going to wrap things up by naming our MVPs as well as our series of the week. I'll go ahead and name my series. I went for Promised Neverland again. Again, we're in that weird moment where a lot of series, not a lot is happening yet because we're preparing for the next big moment. And, you know, the stuff that we got with the development with Gilda, the reveal that Norman suspects Ray is the traitor, that's all good stuff. And Promised Neverland managed to sneak away with the win in our audience poll this week as well. Not by a lot, though. One Piece was very close behind it.
Yes. I will also go with Promised Neverland for mine. I really enjoyed this chapter. The revelation of Ray was a pretty big deal. So that was pretty cool.
And character... Just make sure... Let me just kind of remind myself because I want to make sure... I'm not entirely set on this, but I'm going to go with Sanji this week, putting on his big act in order to deceive Luffy, like what we're seeing him do so far, and I'm curious to see how this confrontation is going to pan out.
I really did not have anybody this week that stood out to me particularly well, so I'm going to go with just a character I noted throughout it, and I'm going to give it to Yuma, because he stood out. Just for being entertaining and fun this week. I'm enjoying seeing him more and more like that.
Honestly, I feel the same way as you. It feels like we didn't really get any really good standout character moments this week, fortunately. I'm sure that things are going to start picking up, though, as some of these series that are on in a trough are going to start climbing up again. It's a shame also that the big... climax of the Toriko fight, we didn't like more. Yeah. That's the one that's been high action for the last 4 weeks, and we both just gonna be like, meh. When's Midora gonna come back and do something awesome and cheesy?
Yeah. did I not tell you about what Froze's tickles are on my full course menu?
You can always have a second dessert. Well, thank you everyone for joining us for Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show on hitbox.tv/RealT normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but sometimes we do need to change things up. Sometimes we gotta alter our recording configuration again, for example. But to stay updated, to know when and where we're going to start recording the show, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow the @WMR Podcast official Twitter account, and you can also follow @RealT, @YRollerOfTime to see what your two hosts are getting up to and talking about. Be sure to check out our past episodes wherever you can find them. Podbean.com, weeklymangarecap.podbean.com, also on youtube.com/weeklymangarecap, And, of course, you can find us on iTunes. And if you listen to us on iTunes, be sure to subscribe and leave a comment to help us beat the woodworking podcasts.
Yes, that is a big help.
Be sure to send us criticism, ask us questions for Q&A episodes, and suggest future manga for us to read by sending emails to us. Cap@yahoo.com is the best way to send your suggestion in, because we are always looking through the archive in there to try and get an idea of what to do next. Special thanks go out to our supporters on Patreon. Your support allows us to do all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. Really, we're really pouring them out now at the end of the month, because we got a bunch to get through. We just did our Digimon commentary on Monday. That should go up really soon. And our bonus episode, which is going to be the top 10, well, depends on how many each of us have, I guess, moments of Air Gear that we didn't get to talk about during our nearly 2 hour long conversation, because yes, there are that many stupid moments in Air Gear. It's going to be coming out soon as well.
Yes.
And finally, of course, special thanks go out to the guys who helped make this podcast what it is: Steve Manor, Tarkarist, and Infamous Planet, who made, in addition to all the regular frames, the special Halloween frame that you
the
see here. I really like it.
Frame. Yes, I almost wish we had more more time to use it, but we'll save this, I guess, for next year, maybe.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, Chris. Yeah. What are we doing next?
Well, Nick, I had a lot of fun with Halloween month. I thought it was fun. I like the idea of jumping into a theme month. So I thought, completely unprovoked, without approving it from you, I would just spontaneously decide on another theme month for next month. So I hope everybody is super excited for November, or what we should be calling it, JoJo-vember, as we're jumping back into it and finishing off this year of JoJo's Bizarre Pokemon Adventure with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 3, a.k.a. Chris doesn't have to read a whole bunch of shit before this next episode.
Fuck you.
So that's going to do it. We're going to be taking a look Part 3, Stardust Crusaders.
Sounds like a Yusei card.
What? Wait, no. You can't end it here, Dick. I'm not stopping this podcast until you give me daps.
Okay.
Let's do this, Nick.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
You ready?
I'm ready. Oh!